Hello, what have we here?
Welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 36. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Anakin Skywalker. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
And I'm Mikey B, because I forgot to say who I am. And I'm also joined this week. I know, right? Long time. Anyway, this week we're also joined by Eric again. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys.
If you want to get involved in our conversation, guys, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at @rradiopodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free. We now have our merchandise, t-shirts and buttons, on sale for 50% off for the holiday season. It is a limited time, so if you have been thinking about getting a Resistance Radio t-shirt, or you just want to support us, check out resistanceradio.net and purchase a t-shirt for 50% off today, as well as the cool buttons. What do you guys think about that?
I'm gonna get some more buttons.
Next time we see Eric, he'll just be covered in buttons.
I'm taking advantage of this deal right now, guys. I don't know if that's cheating.
You can. I put it on sale just for you, Eric. Well, and the holidays, but you know,
okay.
You're as big as the holidays, Eric. Anyway, let's move on to the news. So, going back to our, our Audible, we have Star Wars Catalyst has been released. I bought it as an actual book, but I kind of almost want to listen to it as an audiobook, especially since I'll be driving around for the Thanksgiving holiday, you know, down to my wife's parents' house.
Oh, yeah, Thanksgiving's a thing.
Yeah, Thanksgiving's a thing in the U.S. for your Danya. Sorry, you don't have
that. Yeah, because after, Bonfire Night, Guy Fawkes, Fireworks Night, whatever you want to call it, which is November the 5th in the U.K., after that point, it's like full on Christmas right up until December 25th. So we're in full Christmas swing over here because we have no more holidays.
We're in full Christmas swing here. Thanksgiving is forgotten about in the U.S. Like, people get together for food.
It's true.
The day after Halloween, Santa Claus goes up in the mall. So it's cool.
Yeah, well, I have a fundamental disagreement with that. I feel like all holidays prior to Christmas should be done and over before you start.
I agree with you, but you know, they do Christmas in July. But
cha-ching!
Where are the Life Day decorations?
Actually, I'm not going to get into it, but if you check out StarWars.com, there's actually a really cool thing how to celebrate Life Day. So it's definitely worth checking out. Of course, I know these things. But let's talk about Star Wars Catalyst. Star Wars Catalyst has been released by one of my favorite Star Wars novelists, James Luceno. And there is a ridiculous amount of articles from StarWars.com, as well as people on the internet are saying you have to check it out. One of my favorite articles is The 6 Reasons Catalyst is Essential Reading If You Plan to See Star Wars Rogue One. I've started to read this. I'm only about 5 or 6 chapters in, and it's really good. The book starts off, and I'm assuming follows through the whole thing, is the relationship of Jyn's parents and kind of who they are. And kind of what sets them up for the situation that we're going to see in Rogue One. Have you guys had a chance to look into Catalyst at all?
I've read a couple of articles, particularly the ones on StarWars.com. And there was another one that was an interview with James Luceno as well. And that was really cool. But I haven't had a chance to actually sit down and read the book yet, even though I have bought it. It is sitting on my pile of books to read. So it is there, ready to go, but I just need to find the time to, sit down and read it. It won't take me long once I've sat down, and I've got it in my hands, because I'm just going to be like, okay, now we're going to go. We're going to read through this whole thing in one go. But, yeah, everything I've heard so far or seen so far about it is really interesting. I don't think, I think it's going to be interesting for fans to pick up who want to know about the relationships between these characters, particularly Krennic and Galen Erso going into Rogue One, and how that started. I think it'll be interesting to get a little extra information. I don't think like a lot of the books, it's not going to be essential reading, as in you're going to miss huge amounts of like story if you don't read it. But I think it's gonna be a nice supplement to Rogue One. No, I'm getting I'm getting the feeling that it's a really nice supplemental part of Rogue One.
I think it's going to be the thing that if you're a Star Wars fan, you definitely want to read it before going into Rogue One. It won't spoil any of it for you, but it's going to give you that kind of interesting tidbit of things to tell your friends who are not as big a Star Wars fans as you. I will tell you, if you check out the StarWars.com 6 Reasons Catalyst is Essential Reading, if you plan to go see Rogue One, number 5 and 6 are probably my biggest reasons to have, well, obviously I was going to read it anyway, but to really make sure I'm done with it before Rogue One is Grand Moff Tarkin is present in the novel, and he's himself, his brilliant self, you know, the master tactician that he is. We've talked about Tarkin on the show before, and you kind of get a sense of where Krennic stands in this newly created empire. So you'll know more about our villain in Rogue One just because of his interactions with Tarkin. And then also, Saw Gerrera knows who Jin is. So you kind of learn a little bit about Saw and Jin in the book. So it's definitely worth checking out for me. I already have it on my Kindle, but definitely if you want, maybe check out on Audible and get that free book.
See, now I'm wondering, because obviously I haven't read Catalyst yet, and if any listeners have already read it, I guess this is like, is this like, I had a theory like a while back that the reason that Saw Gerrera and Jin knew each other was because Jin at some point either was or still is involved with like his brand of rebellion, even though it's like edging towards the terrorism side, and that's how they know each other. At some point she's gotten like mixed up with them. So I wonder if my theory is right, if she does know Saw Gerrera, or Saw Gerrera knows Jin, like that far ahead of Rogue One.
Maybe. You'll have to read the book, Danya, and find out.
I will have to read the book, but as I have not read it yet, that's kind of like, I'm immortalizing my theory again before I read the book.
Alright, so that way people say like, oh, Danya hasn't read it. Yeah, she was right, or no, she was wrong. Anyway, moving on, ILM X-Lab and Verizon have created Rogue One Recon. This is actually really cool. It's a 360 experience. You can watch it if you have VR for your phone, or you can check it out on just YouTube and click around to see the full 360. In the United States, you can also go to a Verizon store and experience it with VR. They have a nice little demo and headset set up. But it's a short video, about 2-3 minutes, of a small X-Wing squadron that stumbles into the construction of the Death Star. They take scans, and they even say that they have to send this to Mon Mothma at Yavin Base before they are destroyed. So I will tell you this, it was really cool. Kind of, I actually had this through VR. I went down to the Verizon store near me, and I put the little headset on, and they gave me a little demo of it when I first saw it. But it was pretty cool, just like being completely immersed in it. I was able to look around, turn my head, and see inside of X-Wing. I have the droid R4 is behind me, so I turned my – I spun around in the chair they had me sit in. And I looked at the droid behind me as we were going into light speed and stuff. So I thought it was really cool. The downside to it is, as an X-Wing pilot, I only lasted about those 3 minutes before my ship was destroyed.
That was the downside for me as well. I was like, oh my God.
I'm like, this is so cool. And then you just killed me. Why would you kill my character off? Like, it was so sad. But I will say one.
You're one of those guys in the movies who dies in the trench run.
I was sad.
Exactly.
No, I was a little sad about it, but I will say it was pretty cool. Like just to be able to look down, like they have your whole body in the ship and everything. Obviously, your hands don't match up because it's not a full VR like game or anything like that. But it's just a VR experience. Like I said, I've also since watched it at home on my computer monitors. It's on YouTube. You can just click and drag around with your cursor and stuff. So,
which is what I did, not having access to VR in like my house or.
Verizon.
We don't have Verizon stores, so...
Sorry. Yeah. It's a U.S. thing only, but definitely check it out. It's really cool. Eric, did you get a chance to look at it, or are you just looking at it now?
Yeah, just looking at it now, but I think that VR now, you know, in the state that it's in with the Oculus and PlayStation VR, is only going to be more and more exciting. And what they're going to be doing with Battlefront, and just VR in general in the Star Wars universe, I think I see it as a way forward. to do really cool immersive stuff like this. So I'm really excited for like that mode of experience and also what specifically Star Wars is going
to
be.
I would love to like have some kind of extended X-Wing VR experience, because this, in the little YouTube video, it was great, like spinning around, but I was like, as I'm like turning it 360, I'm thinking, I really want to play this in VR, even though you can't play it necessarily, you just
Star Wars
sit and experience
land.
It and you can look around. But I really want some kind of, like, I want to fly an X-Wing. Like,
so,
come on.
I think you're going to fly. I think you're going to fly a Millennium Falcon in Star Wars Land. You know, I'm going to go on a complete sidetrack here. I personally am so excited for Star Wars Land. You know why? Because I feel like they're going to do something that no one is ready for. Because Disney is so good at, like, their Imagineers are amazing. And as much as, you know, I love Harry Potter. Most people know that. Eric, you do MuggleCast regularly. But I love Harry Potter, and I love the Harry Potter, you know, Wizarding World Harry Potter at Universal. But I've never been super impressed. And one of my cousins works for Universal, too. I'm sorry. You know. But I've never been super impressed with any of the rides or anything. I was super impressed with the Harry Potter Wizarding World. But even then, like, I can only imagine what Disney could have done if they had it. So I am just beyond excited for see what Disney's going to do for Star Wars Land. I'm sorry. Like, maybe I'm a Disney fanboy, but I think they're going to...
I
think when people see it, they're going to be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So I am just beyond excited for Star Wars Land. And I think VR is just coming into its feet now. And I think Disney's going to take it to a whole nother level. And we're going to be able to experience Star Wars like we've never experienced before when we visit, you know, California or Florida. So,
yeah.
I'm very pleased about the Wizarding World theme park, and I like how it's essentially rewritten the book or set the bar so high for what future parks, what future rides should be. You know, we saw Disney's response to Wizarding World of Harry Potter when they, and especially specifically having Hogwarts, when they built Belle's Castle and had the Be Our Guest restaurant inside of it. I mean, it's such a good, like, it's clear what the causality has been. But Belle's Castle is amazing. LeFou's Brew. I know. Danya, did you get to try out the great stuff?
I have not been. It's delicious. I want to go back.
You have to try it. It's delicious.
The last time I was in Disney was before they built all of that, and I am like the biggest.
Aren't you supposed to come for your birthday?
My 30th, that's in 2018. So as long as like America doesn't end by by 2018, I'll be there.
That's a question, isn't it? The so Disney's. I mean, that was clearly how Disney handled that, and I have nothing but full confidence. Especially like you just always have the benefit of being built
later.
Yeah,
and that's exactly
you know,
it. It's like
than
what comes
every
next.
Ride
it's
before
what
you.
Comes next. This is going to be it. So
I haven't experienced the Wizarding World of Harry Potter either, because when I got to do my big Florida trip, they were building
Danya?
It
She's no
at
longer
the time.
Part of co-host. Yeah.
No. What we have to do is we have to use all these funds from our 50% off t-shirt and buttons to get her here next weekend to just experience.
Yeah, that's a little. We have to sell out.
So you guys really have to buy a lot of shirts and buttons. Danya is coming to Florida.
The big thing for me, for like Wizarding World of Harry Potter versus what the Star Wars world is going to feel like, is that for me, I've been to a lot of the filming locations that they've used for Harry Potter. Seeing as I live this side of the pond, it's a lot easier for me to do that. So, I've been to a lot of like the actual castles that they filmed in. I've been to like loads of just the on location bits that they filmed in, and I wonder, like, will I get that same feeling when I go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter? Like, I don't know how it's going to feel, because I've done the studio tour as well, so I've been in like the sets and the props that they've got all still set up and they've rebuilt inside the studio tour. Eric, you've been over the side of the pond and done that, right?
I've done it too.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Like the the Hogwarts Express bit. Like I came around the corner for that and like burst into tears. Like for that bit.
So you're saying with Star Wars, you won't have been to any of the locations?
Yeah. So for me, Star Wars, for example, is like, it doesn't have a real world setting. Like, it doesn't have, like, it's not set in the UK. So it doesn't have, like, real locations. There aren't parts of, like, London I could walk through and I know from, like, the books or, like, from experience, like, that's where it is. I have walked through recently the part of the station that they used for some filming for Rogue One because I had to get to another place in London, and I literally went through that station, which was quite funny. But for me, because Star Wars is completely... Like, it's a fantasy world in the truest sense, in that it's in a completely different location, different planets, different parts of the universe. Like, Harry Potter is, like, it's Britain. It's
down
the
street from you. Yeah.
It's down the street from me. I could literally walk through different places, and it feels like Harry Potter.
Okay. Like, okay.
So I wonder how, like, that experience will change for me culturally based, because it's so easy for me to get immersed in Harry Potter because it's so real to me, versus seeing, like, Star Wars in real life, like, everything that I've lived through it on, like, in the movies, being able to walk through that.
I'm gonna say just one more thing. Like, just think about, like, even at Indie PopCon, seeing, like, the 501st members being surrounded by stormtroopers and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
that right there is like, oh my god, this is so cool. We got stormtroopers. You're like,
yeah.
And, like, at Disney, they have them too, and they're in. You know, don't get me wrong. The 501st do an amazing job. Disney has not the 501st making them themselves, which is amazing, but they have the same people who made it for the movies. You know, these props and costumes and stuff. So, you know, like, you're going to be immersed in the characters that are just going to walk around. There's supposed to be a cantina that lets you go into, like, Maz's castle / the cantina, you know, Mos Eisley cantina. Like, I'm just excited to go into any of these places and just be completely immersed.
Yeah.
And Disney does such a good job, even of, like, the shops, when they're surrounded by people, you still feel the environment, not the crowd of, you know, the people going. So this VR, you know, I can see this just be kind of the beginning of something that's really cool.
Yeah.
ILM X-Lab is obviously working on something, and I'm sure we'll see it soon-ish.
I think I'll get my first taste of what it'll feel like to walk through, like, things that have existed in the Star Wars universe, because I'm going to the Star Wars Insights exhibition that they are running in London for the next year. I'm going at some point this month, one weekend this month, I'm going to go to that, and they've got, like, costumes from the original trilogy, sets and all sorts, and props and everything. So that's going to be really interesting to experience. So I think the exhibition was in New York at one point.
Huh. New York or Chicago?
I couldn't tell you exactly. I know it was in America somewhere.
Yeah, it was here for a while. And someone could correct us. I'm not going to look it up. But let's move on to the other news that we have. We got some big news about the Han Solo film, The Mother of Dragons. I mean, Emilia Clarke is joining the cast of the Han Solo film. What do you guys think about this?
Mikey, you know my exact reaction to this.
I know your exact reaction. Eric, I haven't actually heard your reaction. What do you think about this, Eric?
What was Danya's reaction? I gotta hear this.
My exact reaction to this casting news, and it's nothing against Emilia Clarke, who I love. I think she's a fantastic actress, and I really, really love her. But my legit first reaction was, wow, do the Star Wars guys think that, like, once they've hired a woman, a woman who's brunette and a black guy, they've hit, like, their diversity quota? Like, we're done. We're good. We've got everything covered now.
An exact quote for you, Danya. Is the Star Wars diversity quota, in quotes, one black man, one white female brunette, ? Like, what the fuck? You know, that's it. Well, we're diverse now. We've done our jobs. So, like, yeah. So, Danya was very as the news broke, that's what the message to me said.
Skeptical. And you know what, though? I think that's a very fair question.
You know.
But.
Well, here's the thing. We heard they were looking for someone of color for a female lead. And Emilia Clarke has announced to be joining the cast of the Han Solo standalone film. that doesn't mean they're not still looking for a another female lead. That doesn't mean it. They have announced it. They're just simply saying that she has joined the film. They don't say anything else. We have Phil Lord and Christopher Miller heading the film. They're both great directors. I think they're just saying, hey, she's officially signed on. She signed the contract. We're excited to have her, as a character. Like, I'm okay with it.
I'm going to, hold out hope that one of those actresses' names who is, being thrown around, which was, Zoe Kravitz, Tessa Thompson, and Naomi Scott, right? Those were the three that were in contention, right? So I'm still hoping that one of them is cast, because I would love to see any or all three of them in the Star Wars universe. I think that would be fantastic. My worry is a couple of the sites that were writing this up, and I can't remember if one of them was the one that broke the news, said that the casting is rounded out with the addition of Emilia Clarke. So I don't know if,
So you're thinking that the lead female role, which Zoe and Tessa and Naomi were, you think that could be the role that just went to Emilia?
I'm concerned that from some of the wording on some of the sites that were reporting this initially it sound like that might be the case.
I think Emilia Clarke will not be in the lead role or any sort of lead role, sort of like what Lupita Nyong'o was
Force Awakens.
Force Awakens.
Yeah.
They may not even use her physical, they may motion capture her. She might be an alien, barely recognizable, maybe just lending her voice.
See what role she'll be playing.
Here's the thing is, when the rumors were coming about of who we thought we were going to get for a female lead for the Han Solo film, we're like, are we going to see Asana Solo? And that's in the comics. Her race is already, drawn in there. It's not something that is something that they can, wash over, if you will. So, come on. They won't do something like that because it's already set. So, they can't just redo this. So, I'm sure this is going to be another character. I'm sure it's going to be okay. Danya, I know. I have
legitimate concerns based on the current state of Hollywood. I will hold out hope that they're doing much better than a lot of other franchises in respect to their casting. But I'm still slightly concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Well, Danya.
We'll have to wait and see.
There's a surprise for you waiting when you see Fantastic Beasts.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
It's relevant to that discussion.
You'll see it. Anyway, moving on. We'll kind of see. We'll have to wait and see how this develops. We'll see what happens. I'm excited. I like Game of Thrones, so. Star Wars stickers 2 for Apple's iMessage. I will tell you this, I love stickers. I don't know if you guys know that I love the stickers inside iMessage. I'm an Apple fanboy. I work for Apple, what can I say? But I'm a huge fan of stickers. I've made my own. Heck, I can send you a sticker of my face. I've made my own set of stickers. That's how much I love it. So I've made a whole bunch of stickers. Myself. But Apple has released, or Star Wars has released stickers too, which are all Rogue One inspired stickers. And unlike the original Star Wars sticker pack, these are animated. So you have a Jyn Erso saying, "I rebel." She's moving. I rebel. I will say one of the ones that really makes me laugh is there's a Jabba the Hutt, just like there was in the first one, but this one is Jabba choking, going, "Aah!" He's actually choking, which I thought was pretty funny. You have Han Solo as the stormtrooper saying, "We're all fine here." You got the Emperor Palpatine going, "Good." Poe Dameron, who talks first.
I love that one.
Yeah.
That one, and I think maybe there's a Boba Fett one that's him saying as you wish.
Yeah. Maz Kanata, "Where's my boyfriend?" I don't know how often I'll use that one. Maybe if I message you, Eric. But who knows? I will say there's one sticker in here that is really cute that I feel is completely misplaced. Is the Loth cat from Rebels. Lothel cat that is there. He's really cute. He's got a little smiley face and everything. But it's a Rebels sticker, and we have Rogue One stuff. And
right in the middle of, yeah.
Yeah, it's at the very end, and it's kind of cool, but it's cute. But I don't know, unless you're a Star Wars Rebels fan, you probably won't catch it. But it just feels kind of out of place. But I like them. I like them all. I like Saw Gerrera. What will you do? If he didn't have the gray in there, what people might say that looks like me. Right? But yeah, so, you know, I'm a fan of the stickers. They're really fun to just kind of throw onto your part of your text messages and stuff. So check them out. You can check them in the iMessage store. If you don't know how, you can message me on Twitter at Mikey Boucher or at our radio podcast, and I'll tell you exactly how. We can go ahead and have a conversation with them. They're awesome. So moving on, unless you guys have something to say about the stickers.
I mean, the only thing is that I would love to be able to, like, use the stickers more, but because, like, you... They're so expensive.
It's $2. For the amount of joy I get out of them, it's worth it.
Every set, though?
See, here's the thing, Tanya. I'll be honest with you. I'm pulling up my phone right now. I have exactly 2 sets I've paid for. The original Star Wars one and the Star Wars 2. Those are the only stickers I've bought. There's lots of other stickers that are free. And then there's the set of stickers that I made myself, where there's my face, me giving a thumbs up. See, So I agree. Like, stickers can be very expensive. So I'm a little bit more picky in, like, you know, the type of, you know, stickers I'll buy. Eric, you just got a sticker of me.
I was waiting. I was going to ask, what did I do to deserve this? I just got it. Hey!
There I am. But yeah, that's the thing. Is like, you know, the stickers are just a fun thing to add to your conversation.
It's $1.99.
It's fun. Think about the conversations you can have. We've got a mission for you. Send the little Mon Mothma. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, check them out. I like them. Anyway.
This is weird. It went on top of your old message to me. Is it supposed to do that?
Well, it's because it's a sticker. I can place them anywhere. Here, watch this, Eric.
But if I...
You can respond. It's there.
I can place them anywhere on my screen?
Yeah. Look at it. I'm going to put K2SO onto... She chose Poe. There you go.
Hang on.
Hold on. It's going to be there.
Oh my god!
You're going to get a choking Jabba the Hutt on test.
You're updating my screen with your stickers. That's weird.
See, people don't realize stickers are like stickers. They're not like emojis. Like emojis are like
Eric's just like, I don't like this.
You guys are so old. All right, emojis are a thing of the past. Emojis are a thing of the past. Stickers are the wave of the future. I could put stickers on top of your messages.
Please don't.
If you send me a selfie, I have stickers that have like a mustache and a top hat that I can put on top of your picture.
Okay, I can literally put stickers on top of it. I've always wanted a mustache. Okay.
There you go.
We'll play with that later.
See, it's stickers though. They're not emojis. They're stickers. There's a difference. They're fun. Anyway, let's move on to some news we got from the Star Wars Twitter. It's kind of cool. Ooh. Right? So I will say this. I'm a little disappointed. The Star Wars UK Twitter account has been way more interesting to me lately compared to the US one. This is not, you know, whoever's doing the US one, like, I still love you. I love looking at all the stuff you post. But the UK one released an awesome featurette. It's about a two-minute featurette showing Gareth Edwards, Felicity Jones, Diego Luna discussing their roles, as well as some behind-the-scenes footage of Rogue One. And we also found out that it's got a PG-13 rating from this featurette, which is awesome. And then also today, they also released on you that you can buy your Rogue One tickets tomorrow. In the UK, not in the US.
Why would they even say that it's PG-13 if it's a UK video? Because PG-13 is an MPAA rating. It's an American thing.
Well, the video that the UK one has, it's weird because I watched it the day it was released and it was on the title card. It said Rogue One, because I'm assuming they're going to release the same video in the US. And it had PG-13 at the bottom. I went back today as I was finishing up the notes. And we're not recording this on a Wednesday, everyone. We're recording this Sunday, the day you're getting this episode. I went back. Surprise! I went back today, and the PG-13 rating is off of it. But specifically, it was Rogue One: A Star Wars Story is rated PG-13 for extended sequences of sci-fi violence and action. It's expected. We've had 2 other Star Wars films that are PG-13, but this featurette is very cool. And of course, you can buy your Rogue One tickets in the UK tomorrow on Monday. I've been checking Fandango every single day to see when the US tickets go on sale.
I'll bet you anything in the US they'll come out on Black Friday.
That's what I'm thinking. I've heard 28th a couple times from people. But, you know, here's the thing. The problem with them coming out on Black Friday for me is I have to work Black Friday. And I have a $600 gift card because I'm buying 48 tickets for the first showing. I need to be like the first one to buy my tickets for my theater so I can get the best seats in the house. You know, I did it last year. I bought for Force Awakens, I bought 3 rows of 10 for me and my friends. But this year, the list has grown because apparently people found out.
So like, wait, can't you just shirk responsibility? I mean, get like one of your 47 other people who are seeing this movie to you who don't work that day to like pull their weight a little bit?
It's Black Friday. Everyone works that day that I
know. Don't we all?
And poor Mikey, because Black Friday is legitimately the only day that Apple has a sale, like, ever.
Yeah. Well,
they don't do sales any other time of the year.
I don't know. They don't tell me.
I'll lay it out for you. They don't tell you anything until you get in on the day and you see the leaflets that have, like, the sale prices on there. Apple are, like, as good at keeping secrets as like Lucasfilm and everyone else and the Marvel universe.
You know what, Lucasfilm, you can tell me that stuff anyway. But yeah, so Star Wars Twitter released a 2-minute featurette. Check it out, it's really cool, it's worth watching. And then of course you can buy your tickets in the UK starting tomorrow. Monday, and we'll find out soon. I'm so excited. On the US. Sorry, I'm checking Fandango.
Eric, last time we talked, I think we discussed like how I wasn't probably going to be able to go and see Rogue One at midnight. I was going to have to wait until the weekend. I can go and see it at midnight now!
Well, congratulations! This is going to be great!
I want to go see it at 7 o'clock on Thursday, which is what they've done with every Marvel film and Star Wars film.
Yeah, they do that at all for you, Danya? Because here in the U.S., you can you can see shows at like 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8:30, 12, or, you know, 10:30, and then midnight the day before. Like, it's ridiculous.
No. It's like midnight.
They
usually
that's the way it should be.
Yeah, it's like, you see it at midnight, and then after midnight, like, sometimes they'll do, like, 3D showings, and they'll have multiple 3D showings that start at midnight, and usually they'll have 2D showings that'll start at, like, 1 minute past midnight.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and that's how it used to be, but Disney and, like, they've all been doing, like, this Wednesday or Thursday release, like, soft release, if you will, so.
They just want larger weekends.
The 7 o'clock, but, like, the 7 o'clock time slot, that's midnight our time.
Yeah.
Oh, that is
so
true.
It could be that they're releasing it at the same time across time zones.
That's true. Well, so see, it's midnight 7 o'clock in the West Coast too, usually.
Well, I can't explain that one. I can't explain everything.
The reason why I say that, Danya, is because like I know I was getting out of The Force Awakens because I went to a 7 o'clock showing last year, and my mom was going into a Force Awakens at 7 o'clock. And I said, oh, guess who is the son of, you know, guess who Kylo Ren really is? She's like, don't tell me my phone's going off now. So, like, you know, that does happen. But I think it's close enough, at least for the West Coast, like, I think it's close enough that they figure people are going to turn their phones off and not read any of the spoilers as they come out.
Yeah.
Anyway, last bit of news before we go into our spotlight topic is we had a new episode of Rebels last night, The Iron Squadron. Danya, what'd you think of this episode?
It was a little meh for me, which I was kind of disappointed in, mostly because we were introduced to a ship of basically Ezra-like characters.
Three more Ezras!
Which for me was infuriating, because they were making all of the ridiculous mistakes that Ezra makes, and there was no one to temper that, either. Like, that's there true. Was no one there trying to keep them in check, or be it like, Ezra, no! And then they basically just get to run around going, Ezra, yes!
Yeah.
It was, you know,
I think I told you I was frustrated with the whole episode. I enjoyed it. Like, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I'm excited for Iron Squadron to be joining the Rebellion. And I watched Rebels Recon, and Pablo Hidalgo said that in the original A New Hope, there was this idea of like kind of a bunch of kids, kind of like Lost Boys, coming to join the rebellion and fighting because, you know, parents have been killed and stuff like that. So, and it makes sense. Like, we've seen Ezra, his parents were taken. He was fighting the Empire on his own on Lothal. So it makes sense. And I liked it. And I also like that some of the characters were named after people we know at Lucasfilm. Like Goody is after Andy Gutierrez from Star Wars Show and Rebels Recon. So I liked it. I also liked the return of Aladdin hair, which was kind of fun. But like I said, like you said, I was a little frustrated because they were making the same mistakes that, you know, Ezra made season one, not still makes them in season two, and still makes a little bit in season three. So you're frustrated.
Yeah. But, super frustrated. The one thing that was really cool for me was that we got the family connection back to Sato. I thought was really neat. It was nice to see that he had some family and that there was that connection there. That was really cool because I quite like Sato as a character and I do want to learn a little bit more about him. So that was neat. I liked that. It was kind of cool to see a little bit more of Thrawn. It wasn't enough for me. It's very, very gradual. We're getting like drip fed Thrawn at the moment, and I do kind of want to see him a little bit more, because as interesting as he is in the little bits that we're getting, like, and I get that they're building up to something, I understand what they're doing, but now it's getting frustrating that we're not getting more of him, because he was so interesting in the premiere episode and that worked so well what they did there. Now I feel like they should be giving us like,
no, I think he did it perfect. I think Thrawn was perfect. He's like, Sato, so that's what it took to get you. Like, you know, he's calculating everything. Like, that was probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
Like, you could see he's calculating it all. So, I get it. But I will say probably my favorite part of the episode was Rebels Recon, where we were able to get a sneak peek at next week's episode. Which brings back one of my favorite characters, Hondo Inaka. So I'm excited to see what Hondo has with us next week. All right.
And he has a new partner who sounded like, I need to look up to see who the voice actor is of the character, but he sounded a bit like, you guys have seen Mulan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know the guy who's like, grading all the recruits for the Emperor to make sure that they're worthy for that. He sounded like, the voice actor sounded like him.
Huh.
So I kind of want to look it up and see if that's who it is, because I didn't catch the name of the character.
You know what? Yeah, it does sound like him as I'm thinking about what was in the trailer. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's time for our spotlight topic, yeah?
What?
Yeah.
Anakin Skywalker.
I was going to say he's a person, and his name is Anakin.
I'm a person, and my name is Anakin. Oh, wow. All right. So, Eric, do you want to lead us through this beginning part of Anakin Skywalker's life?
Let's talk about it. This is Anakin Skywalker, who later becomes Darth Vader, but we're not talking about that right now.
Next week.
Here's a biography. Yes, this will be a two-week discussion. And here is the Anakin part of it. Anakin grew up on Tatooine. His mother, Shmi Skywalker, raised him while the two of them were slaves for Wada the Junk Dealer. After meeting Qui-Gon Jinn, who comes to Tatooine for help, Anakin is taken to fulfill his destiny as a Jedi, but he vows to return and free all of the slaves.
Yeah, I don't think that happens.
But he vows, man. That's his promise. That's his.
Eventually. He comes back. We see it. Anyway, moving on to episode one, The Phantom Menace. So we have some interesting tidbits background of Anakin here. We learn from Shmi Skywalker that she reveals to Qui-Gon that Anakin may have been immaculately conceived. You know, her line was...
It's a big deal. It's a big deal for Phantom Menace, too, because you meet this kid. He is bright for his age. He may or may not have superhuman reflexes or Jedi, you know, type reflexes. And it's only through conversation, because Qui-Gon is so very interested in this kid. He's like, well, who is his father? And Shmi does not necessarily have an answer for that.
Yeah, which is interesting. And it brings up, you know, before we dive into just Anakin, that brings up a whole different, like, lore and legend to Star Wars, you know, to the Star Wars universe. Because before, we didn't really have any of this, you know, kind of chosen one, immaculate type conception, you know, tied to religion.
Virgin birth.
Yeah,
very, very, very religious overtones going on.
Wait, what religion is it, you know, comparing it to? It's very obvious. It's very obvious. But, you know, here it is. You know, Anakin is this kind of virgin in the Force. And if you go back to midichlorians that we saw only in episode one and nowhere else ever again, he had more midichlorians than even Grandmaster Yoda, which for a kid to have all that power is pretty, you know, they were setting him up for something, obviously. We know what his, what the end is. We knew going into episode one, but it definitely is interesting to see, you know, this type of lore thrown onto Anakin at such a young age.
Yeah, you know, there's an alternate reading that you can, like, this is how I first understood it when I first saw episode one in theaters when it came out. And I was 11 or 12. But her line, there was no father. I carried him. I gave birth. I raised him. I was like, oh, so Anakin's dad was just some deadbeat, right? Like there was no father because she, by saying that, she means he just wasn't in the picture. But then she has the line, I can't explain what happened. And then I'm like, oh, well, you know, then that probably points more towards the religious aspect. But I think you can read it like, just that she is sort of either being defensive or coy or, you know, indicating to Qui-Gon that, you know, she won't even answer his question because it's either not worth talking about or maybe she doesn't know.
I think it's going to be more along she doesn't know. You know, it's one of those things, she just doesn't know what happened. She can't explain. I'll take that line at face value. I can't explain what happened.
Can't explain what happened.
You know, and you now have this boy who is 9 at the time of Force Awakens. You already mentioned his
Phantom Menace.
Yeah, not when it happened, but at the time of Phantom Menace, that she's talking to Qui-Gon. There you go. See, I fixed it. But, you know, he already knows a lot. He's already a tinker. You know, he's working in Watto's.
Speaks multiple languages.
Yeah, speaks multiple languages. You know, speaks to Sebulba, you know, in his
language. Little overachiever.
I know, right? he's observant enough to where he even calls out that Qui-Gon is a Jedi. He says, nothing can kill a Jedi. I saw your laser sword. You have to be one. Even though his deductive reasoning is not quite there, because, you know.
Child.
Child. But still, but he's able to at least observe. And he sees Qui-Gon's lightsaber and puts two and two together that Qui-Gon is a Jedi. You know, and even in the in the far path, you know, the outside that is Tatooine, he's able to go ahead and realize, like, he knows who a Jedi is. Like, those rumors, those stories have made their way out there. Just like the rumors of an angel.
I love the angel line is also very, 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 very beautiful. Oh,
stop it. No.
Space traders talk about them. Yeah. They must be you. I love his optimism. I love his innocence. I love everything about young Anakin. And what you were saying too, Mikey, about him being very, like, I mean, he's resourceful. He's talented. I think languages probably come naturally to him. Like, this is just the way that he is. And it boils down to, sure, like, how force sensitive he is or how many midichlorians are in his bloodstream. But, you know, you look at this kid who really doesn't have a whole lot to be happy about. He's a slave. He's on this planet with his mother against his will. There's no dad in the picture. He gets just routinely abused, not necessarily even by Watto, but by the clientele of Watto's shop, such as Sebulba, who just treat him like dirt because there's 1,000 other kids just like him on this planet. You know, he's scum. He has to go fix some repair droids, you know, every day. When somebody's careless and breaks them. But he manages to be this, like, earnest, thoughtful, sweet kid, you know, who really is genuinely unaware until it's pointed out to him what his destiny might be. I mean, he has fire.
Do you feel that him learning about that destiny is what eventually took away that optimism? do you feel like being aware of it is what ultimately started to change him?
Maybe. He also has this line right before he finds it. He's just like, someday I'm going to get off of this rock. Like, he does want to, like, he sees himself bettering himself, but it doesn't, that plan doesn't have legs until Qui-Gon's like, oh yeah, you're probably, you know, ripe for the picking to be a Jedi. Like, Qui-Gon's appearance, and it's very opportune with timing because of everything else that's happening, not just for Qui-Gon, but for, you know, on Tatooine as well, with the big pod race coming up. It's really the perfect set of circumstances that actually gets him off the planet and gets him going. So yes, there's some, like, causality there where you could blame Qui-Gon. But I think that's just sort of, in general, any human story, right? You know, you begin with high hopes, and you can be determined, and then somewhere around the middle, you either succeed, you know, you try, and you either succeed or fail, and if you try again, you know, that's up to, like, the growth thing. But, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily Qui-Gon's fault, or that it's the Jedi's.
I'm not saying that it's his fault. I think it's more, like, putting undue pressure on him, I guess, from, like, every angle, pretty much.
Yes,
like,
I know. This.
Well, no, yeah. I don't think so at all. I'll disagree. I don't think at all, like, the pressure. I don't think it ever gets to him really so much. I think it's more... I think it really comes down to... We've talked about this when we talked about Qui-Gon and Yoda and the rigidity of, like, the Jedi Council, which we should definitely talk about it at a later time. But I think we've talked about, like, if Qui-Gon was around, would the Sith have taken over? You know, it's one of those things. Because the reason for this is Qui-Gon, even though, like, you know, when he gets to, you know, Coruscant, the Jedi Council refuses to teach him. Even though he is this virgin of the Force that Qui-Gon found, and he believed it was the living Force that brought him to him, and everything, you know, all these things had to happen to get him to it, right? But, you know, they refuse to teach him, but Qui-Gon still offers. And he even tells Anakin, kind of like in this light way, like, be mindful of your surroundings, just watch us. I can't officially teach you yet, but just, you know, be observant, because he already knows the kid's observant, right? And if Qui-Gon was around to the very end and didn't die at the end of, you know, The Phantom Menace, would he have had a different type of relationship with Anakin than what he has with Obi-Wan? You know, if you, at the same time, like, when you look at the Council, is the Council even that smart? They leave, you know, Qui-Gon's last wish was for Anakin to be trained, you know, and he tells Obi-Wan to make sure he's trained, you know, train him for me. But why would you put a brand new Jedi Knight who didn't even realize he was ready to become a Jedi Knight to teach someone who is essentially this powerful? He's got more metachlorian than Yoda.
Oh, why is right. Yoda so it's not, kind of, it's kind of it, reckless.
Yeah, it's like beyond reckless from Force. And I'm wondering if it's more that what causes him to go through. Because that's, you know, I don't want to jump into Attack of the Clones just yet. But, like, think all the way through, like... Like, that's what the Council has done. And when you look at Anakin, especially in The Phantom Menace, even at the end, when they go back to Naboo to try to, you know, free it, which is very, you know, something that Sidious did not see. Like, them going back to Naboo, you know, Darth Sidious even said, this is strange. It's too aggressive for her. So then he sends Maul to go to Naboo and everything like this, right? So they go to Naboo, and Anakin can't be trained, but he tells him to be observant. He ends up inside a Naboo starfighter. And he's got R2-D2 with him. And it's on autopilot that gets him up into the space battle, right? And okay, so let me just finish this whole thought right here. You know, like, obviously the Force is with him. Because he, one, is in the middle of the thick of the battle, right? Still hasn't, you know, and that's just what he's doing.
We didn't shoot it.
yeah, exactly. We're not quite there. But, like, finally when he gets, you know, autopilot off, he's like, oh, wow, now this is pod racing. He's like, what's a good maneuver? Spinning. Spinning's a good maneuver. And he spins and the droids just shoot past him because the spin is just perfect enough for what it needs to be. He gets overloaded and he flies into the, you know, the control ship. Oh, no. And then all the battle droids are coming. And then he ends up shooting proton torpedoes instead of just his laser gun that he was learning how to use like a minute before by pulling on it. He shoots the proton torpedoes, which destroys, the control droids, you know, main power core and causes the whole thing to blow. And it just like you said, we didn't shoot it. Oh, look, one of ours coming from the inside. And he goes, woohoo. You know, the Anakin Skywalker is pure luck. The Force has driven him to it. You know, like it's. This kid really has the power, and the fact that no one thought to actually train him, except Qui-Gon, the one guy who dies, it's just reckless. Like, I think that's what causes him to kind of go, it's not the pressure of being the chosen one. You know, it's the nature versus nurture type thing. See, you know, he believed...
So my problems with that, and going back to what Donnie was saying, too, about, you know, whether or not his innocence is, like, whether or not he has undue stress put on him because of who he is. I was going to say that the Boonta Eve pod race is probably the most pressure you can have put on you, right? I mean, you're talking about getting yourself and your mother out of slavery, saving these complete strangers, and competing in a race that you've never even finished, which he does. He does all of that. So I think that would instill him with a great degree of confidence, or at least the comfort that he could rely on his instincts the way that Qui-Gon is beginning to teach him. So I don't think the pressure became too much. And Mikey, as you were saying, like, he's able to find his way using his instincts the rest of the way to destroy a Trade Federation ship, and you know, it nets out really positive for him. But the Jedi Council not wanting to train him is not only just like the world's most giant middle finger to Qui-Gon, to the Force itself. I mean, that's a middle finger to Anakin, really. It's like, you might be the most powerful person we've seen, but we want nothing to do with you. Nothing short of that, like, nothing would make me turn to the dark side faster if it were me. Like, somebody else comes along and is like, you're super powerful. I'm going to train you. It makes sense to show you what you can do. Like, and remember that the Jedi didn't want you. Like, that's the easiest way to get Anakin to the dark side. It would have happened 2 films sooner, 20 years sooner, if Qui-Gon hadn't stepped in and been like, no, 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 no. I'm going to make sure that you get trained, and I'm going to tell Obi-Wan to do it. But I also agree with what you're saying. It is kind of reckless to get this first-time, you know, Jedi in Obi-Wan to try and train Anakin because, you know, as we see as their relationship develops, Obi-Wan is incapable of being sort of the discipliner that Qui-Gon might have been, or that any of the other Jedi, had they agreed to train Anakin, would have been for him.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that. And let's move on to Attack of the Clones right here, just because it kind of leads directly into what you were saying.
Yeah.
So, 10 years have passed. Anakin is now no longer little Annie. My name is Anakin. he is a trained Padawan. And he has a father-son/brother relationship with Obi-Wan, if you will. You know, there is that relationship of, you know, one being older and the other one being a little bit younger. But it's a little bit, I would say, in Attack of the Clones, it's still kind of father-son, rebellious teenager relationship. Not until the Clone Wars and Revenge of Sith is a more brother-brother. You know, they're more peers, if you will.
I don't know that I'd agree with that.
I would probably say it always felt like very brotherly, the relationship, even at the beginning of Attack of the Clones.
There's a little bit of arrogance too when they're chasing, you know, in the vehicles, and sort of, you know, Anakin is showing off because he's the better pilot, but like Obi-Wan is always there ready to admit that Anakin's the better pilot. So they have, I think, like a little friendly kind of. I've never seen it father son necessarily.
Well, the only reason I bring it up, and I'll say the father son here is. I see it more as teenage rebelliousness, at least at the beginning of Attack of the Clones, especially when you see the first thing we see them is they go to see Padme, right?
Right.
And he's nervous to go see her, and Obi-Wan's like, hey, you know, don't worry, it'll be okay. You know, and that's the thing, but he steps in when they're talking to Obi-Wan, like he oversteps his bounds, which I don't know if, you know, brother, I think they would have been on even playing field if they were seeing more brother, but like at this place, it's very obvious master and Padawan. And he gets chided by Obi-Wan to be mindful of his place and everything. But even though Anakin feels he can protect Padme better, like he feels like he knows. And it's not just that he's stronger in the Force. I think it's, you know, it's more than you know why he feels like he can protect Padme better. You know, he can sense everything that's happening in the room in there. And Obi-Wan's even worried that she turned off the security cameras. And it's okay because Anakin is there and he can sense everything going on. You know,
well,
but he's still reckless.
I will still say that it's very sibling-esque.
Okay.
That, because I, as an older sister, I have had conversations with my brother where I'm like, I've seen this situation play out before in my own life, and I'm trying to give him advice and guide him and be like, hey, on a level, kind of being like, you know, you really need to think about what you're doing here, because I've done stuff like this before, and I'm telling you, it doesn't turn out the way that you think it's going to turn out. And he, obviously, as you will always be, because you want to make your own mistakes, you'll dig your heels in and be like, no, I'm doing it my way. I want to do this. Okay. This is what I think. And that is definitely a sibling-esque relationship as well. Like, as an older sibling, I will say that, you know, my brother has been stubborn. Love him to bits. Do really love my brother, but he's infuriating.
All right. I'll take that. You know, I don't know. Me and my brother were close. We're only 2 years apart, so there's plenty of things that he runs into that I've never been. So, you know, I think it's, for me and him, it's more like close friends, me and my brother. So it might be that, whereas this still seems more like father-son relationship to me. But I agree, by the end
of it. That's about, like, so between me and my brother, it's about 4 years between us.
Maybe it's that. Maybe it's because there is that age difference between Anakin and Obi-Wan that I just don't see. Because, like I said, me and my brother are about the same age. Like,
yeah. The other thing is,
music,
like,
and everything.
I also question that, you know, I mean, Anakin has had 10 years of Jedi training at this point, and kind of seeing where that has affected Anakin. He remembers the teachings. He can recite what it is he's supposed to be doing. But casually, he will disregard a lot of this. And that's why Obi-Wan has to keep reminding him and keep, you know, sort of tempering his flame. It's because Anakin has sort of always kept a greater flame than the container that holds it. And he, I think we're seeing, you know, the struggle is real, especially among people like Padme, who he cares about, that Anakin begins to essentially fall out with his own training. And he begins to ignore, again, this is kind of on the Jedi Council, or the Jedi teachings in general, that, you know, Anakin is perhaps perceiving, as you said, Mikey, more than anyone else in the room. He is seeing more, he's feeling more, and as a result, his training is inadequate. He feels as though his training is inadequate. He feels as though his instincts, which have always won out in the past and tend to do so, you know, on those things you can't predict, like bounty hunter, assassin, that you suddenly have to chase, you know, his instincts work out so well for him that he begins to trust them more than all of this programming. So it is sort of a flaw of Obi-Wan to really find a way to send it home so that Anakin always relies on his training, right? But Anakin is just sort of, not really like a misfit, but there's just so much going on with him that he cannot really embrace the teachings of the Jedi fully. And that's obviously Anakin's greatest downfall.
Okay, I'll take that. Just kind of going into Anakin still, though, at this younger age. Again, in Attack of Clones, he's still fairly young. He hasn't matured. We see him mature more in the Clone Wars and then Revenge of the Sith before the full fall. We see him given his first solo role, if you will, is to protect Padme, and they go back to Naboo. But even at this point, Padme puts him kind of almost in his place when they're talking to the Naboo court and their security officer saying, oh, Anakin is still a Padawan, after they call him Master Jedi. It's like, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, like, you even see it in the film that he kind of like puffs up his chest. He's like, yes, I can. And she's like, and then she just comes like, oh, no, he's still a Padawan. Ignore him.
She just kneecapped
him. I know better than him. And it's like, you know, you see him visibly hurt with it. And I think that happened a lot in this film. Like I said, you know, Obi-Wan is chiding him. Padme is chiding him. And I think that kind of builds into his, you know, the character, which leads to directly to his disobedience to Obi-Wan, where they're on Naboo. He's fallen in love with, you know, Padme. You know, they're playing around. He's goofing. They're joking. I think you saw the wonderful picture I sent to you the other day, Danya, of, you know, from Padme to Sadme to Gladme.
I love that one.
Yeah, right? It's wonderful, isn't it? So, you know, he leaves Naboo for Tatooine because he has these direct dark visions of his mother. And he goes to save his mother. But by the time he gets there, his mother, you know, by the time he saves his mother, because she's been taken by sand people, she's dead or dying. you know, she was able to see him, but she dies in his arms. And this is the first, I would say this is probably the first thing that we've seen. Not to say it hasn't happened before, but like this is the first canon thing we've seen of Anakin being tempted by the dark side. Because at that point, he slaughters all the sand people. The women, the children, the pets, everything. Like, he slaughters all of them. I killed them all.
They were like animals, and I slaughtered them like animals. The thing is, too, Qui-Gon reaches out from beyond the grave to try and stop him.
Actually, that was probably my first time remembering hearing Qui-Gon in a film that he wasn't in, him saying no and kind of reaching out, and that, you know, someone watching out for Anakin that wasn't the people who were doing it directly. So you could see, like, you know, if the Jedi Council was more involved in Anakin's training, if Obi-Wan was probably a better teacher to Anakin. Again, this kid has more midichlorian than Yoda. You know, he should have observed, should have talked to Anakin about his dreams of his mother. Let's go see what's going on. Like, they should have done these things beforehand versus letting it get to the point where it's at. And I feel like that's a direct failing of his surroundings and kind of what came to him. And that causes Anakin to kind of be tempted and touched, you know. You know, he's tainted by the dark side after he kills all these, you know, sand people.
Yeah, yeah. There's also this typical teenage reality check that occurs, right? Because he's been away from home for a very long time. He comes back, his mother has married some guy, right? I mean, she isn't even under Watto anymore. Like, he just, I guess, assumes or doesn't know, but guesses that everything's the same way it was when he left it. But he's been gone so long. And it's all anybody can do, you know, to tell Anakin, well, no, this Lars guy really treated your mother well. Yes, she was a slave, but he freed her. He married her. He loves her. But Anakin's got all these new family members, right? Beru and, or, well, what
Owen
is it?
And Beru.
Owen and his girlfriend Beru, who, you know, are like in-laws to him now. And he's just like, you know, or brother, you know, step-sibling. You know, it's your typical don't care, you know, teenage phase weird family members that you now have to put up with. It's just like a typical teenage or young child challenge, I think.
Yeah. I think the problem fell also on the film to try to convey all that in such a short period of time. Like, the development of that was kind of lost, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I feel like it could have been explored in... It could have had more time dedicated to it to explore, and it would have been very interesting. Like, that, how do you adjust your worldview that, like, life has continued on without you? Like, the whole... He has a whole family that he just isn't aware of. Like, how does that affect you?
That sounds especially like Darth Vader also. How do you have kids that you're not aware of?
Yeah, so it's very, very, it's a very interesting thing that they just didn't dedicate enough time to exploring. And there's a lot of, like, really character-based stuff like that that was what I felt could have been explored more in the prequels. Like, it was just, so much was just glossed over. Like, they touched on things that were just so interesting, and then they just were like, okay, cool, we're done with that now.
Yeah. And then, you know, just after all that, you know, just to kind of move on to the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith, it really is just like, okay, they get Obi-Wan's call. Like, things just move too quick, pacing-wise, which it made for an okay film, but, you know, now Obi-Wan calls, they have to leave. He doesn't really get a chance to cope with his feelings of his mother being dead, him touching the dark side, slaughtering women and children and all these sand people. And they go to try to rescue Obi-Wan. You know, and you know, not to put any blame on Padme, but, you know, he's like, no, I'm going to stay here, like Obi-Wan says. Like, he's trying to do the right thing, but she says, no, we have to go. Like, they both are feeding into each other's worst traits. Like, they are both feeding into that rebelliousness of it. And so he can't recover from it. You know, he can't take the time to reflect and look into it, but he goes to try to rescue Obi-Wan with Padme, and they both get caught. And we see how that ends, where it literally starts the beginning of the Clone Wars, with, you know, all the Jedi showing up to save them. We see that we have the Separatist movement, Count Dooku, all of it. It just kind of is the height of that battle there. Yeah. You agree?
I just think as intimate lovers over time, Padme and Anakin, you know, to revisit many opportunities to revisit the lowest point in Anakin's history, you know, when he slaughtered all of those creatures. And all of those creatures, you know, if you feel the Force, if you're a Jedi, they're all connected in the same way. And so when he was taking those lives, he should have been able to feel those, you know, lights flickering out and being snuffed out. And that's not something you easily recover from. So, you know, Padme, who unfortunately, you know, by the time of Revenge of the Sith, is portrayed as largely oblivious and or, you know, self-focused because of her condition. You know, I think that it's a missed opportunity for her to have revisited and kind of calmed and tempered him. You know, Anakin's unfortunate proclivity to give in to his anger and fear and hate is everything that that herself and Obi-Wan should be, you know, looking out for. But I think it's also the shared secret, right, between Padme and Anakin, that they are married, that causes her to remain mum over sort of his darker tendencies, right? Isn't that sort of to her detriment?
Yeah, it would be too, you know, my only concern with this is now we're getting into theorizing behind what their relationship is. We know Anakin has this rage. You know, are you now kind of saying, does he beat her? And it's like an abusive relationship type thing.
No. But in, even clones, then, but like, in Clones, they're married at the end of Clones, and they can't tell anybody about it. So all throughout the Clone Wars and into Revenge of the Sith, she hasn't even told Obi-Wan, who's also the one person who can do the most thing about it. You know, about Anakin.
Yeah. No, I get that. And that's where it comes down to. It's like, you're now thinking about, like, all the what-ifs here. And it's hard because we really just don't know. It wasn't explored as much. In the Clone Wars series, so we did get some interesting tidbits about Anakin specifically as a person. Cool. And I will say the Clone Wars series is the Anakin I think of when I think of Anakin Skywalker. Just because, not to speak ill or anything of, you know, Hayden Christensen, you know, I liked him well enough at the end of Revenge of the Sith as a character. But Anakin, like the joking, all the good in Anakin Skywalker that you saw in episode 1 and all the good that you saw in episode 2 before some of it kind of changed, you see in Clone Wars. Like, he has a unique relationship with the clones, with Rex and his clone troopers. They're not just a number. They're not just a, you know, cannon fodder. They are people. He sees them as people. He treats them as people. You know, they're equals. His relationship with his Padawan, Ahsoka, who he didn't even want, but eventually goes very fond of. And you see his, you know, his pain when Ahsoka actually leaves him and leaves the Jedi Order, which we've talked about in detail when we talked about, you know, Ahsoka as a spotlight topic in the Ahsoka book. So Anakin definitely kind of is not following the Jedi code. You know, he's built all these relationships that probably harm him, you know, in the long run, leading up to Revenge of the Sith and his downfall. Donya, what do you think about kind of the Clone Wars series? Because I know you watched the whole thing.
I love the Clone Wars series. I will put my hands up and say, like, if you didn't watch the Clone Wars, I feel like you didn't really get as much out of the fall of Anakin Skywalker as, like, other people might have, because it just rounds out his character so much and explains all of that so, so, so much clearer than the movies do. Like, everything that happens in the Clone Wars, like, the subtleties in it. And it's a lot because they had so much time to explore it as well.
6 seasons, so.
Yeah. But it really did just showcase what they could have done with Anakin and the conflict in him and the conflict he had with the Jedi Council. And it just was so interesting to explore. And it was so interesting to see, like, his relationships with people outside of, like, just the Jedi. And I don't know, I'm the same as you. When I think of Anakin Skywalker, that's the Anakin I think of immediately.
Yeah. So it kind of leads to, you know, in Clone Wars series, you know, I'm not going to dive too much into it because I know not everyone has watched it. If you haven't watched it, If you want to talk further about this, hit us up on Twitter. I'm happy to have a conversation about it. But leading into Revenge of the Sith, Anakin is now a general in the Clone Army. He's officially a Jedi Knight. He still does stuff with Obi-Wan, but not always. But in the, for the sake of this film, they are put together. Anakin is positioned essentially a pawn in Palpatine's plans as his personal representative on the Jedi Council. So Anakin is part of the Jedi Council, just like Obi-Wan, unlike Qui-Gon, who never made it on the council. But he's not granted the title of master.
Which
I, you know, for someone who's done all those things in the Clone Wars, again, this is where you have to watch the series to see, you know, six seasons of Anakin Skywalker just being, you know, this amazing general over a 3-year time period. You know, he's not granted the title of master, which I can see the council's reasoning for it. He definitely is still reckless. He's not there. He's not at a level of a master. But at the same time, there's never been a master. There's never been someone who hasn't been a master on the council. So it's a slight, it's a smack into Anakin's face, kind of like in Attack of the Clones when, you guys said it's brotherly advice. Obi-Wan, you know, tells him it's not his place yet. He's not there. You know, Padme telling him he's not a, you know, he's just a Padawan still. You know, those types of things are thrown in his face, you know, which he still tries to do the right thing. But, there's enough dark side pulling at him already. Going through, from that, the council asks Anakin to do something that he's not comfortable with. And I don't know if the council should have even asked him to spy on Palpatine. What do you guys think of that?
I mean, everything just kind of builds up to leading to his fall. Like, there's so much, like, just not
bad
only
decisions
just
all around, right?
Yeah, so it's just all little things that basically just are building up to this catalyst of him falling. So it's like, you know, not granting him the title of master, and then when he's basically made a representative on the council, then being told that, like, the only reason they haven't necessarily kicked up a fuss, so to speak, about Anakin being on the council is because he's going to have a much closer relationship with Palpatine, meaning that he can spy on him and report back to the Jedi Council on, like, his moves, his dealings, like, what he's doing, like, anything suspicious, that sort of stuff, which, you know, it's all, like, things that doesn't sit right with Anakin because he feels like it's not what maybe the Jedi should be doing.
Well, he also sees it as sort of betraying his friend, right?
Yeah,
in Palpatine,
yeah,
and that's the real issue here. It's twofold. I don't think there's a problem in the council asking Anakin to spy on Palpatine, but only because they don't know that they're so that Palpatine's been grooming this boy for a decade. You know,
yeah.
Palpatine.
Yeah, that's exactly
Palpatine was
happen.
The one. Yeah, Palpatine saw the potential in the Jedi Council's hesitance to really scoop this boy up and manipulate him. And surprise, surprise! Now you have a really powerful ally who's on the Jedi Council. It's the exact opposite of what the Jedi Council wanted. You know, Anakin will spy.
Will
complain, and he does confide in Palpatine. He tells Palpatine how much the Jedi Council hates him.
Hold on.
Yeah.
But in the end, Anakin is still good. And I believe this, and I'll tell
you why.
What
do you mean in the end? How do you mean in the end?
Okay, so in the end of him being Anakin, he's still good. And the reason for this is when Palpatine reveals that he is Darth Sidious, Lord of the Sith, he leaves. He goes directly to the council. He goes to Mace Windu and tells them that Palpatine is the Sith Lord they've been searching for. He does the right thing. But it's through that 10 years of confidence and gaining, Palpatine knows who Padme is. He knows they're married. And it's that when Anakin doesn't know what's going on because Mace Windu doesn't trust Anakin. Even though Anakin was put on the council to spy on someone, he's friends, and he comes back to tell him what he has found out, and he's left alone. And Anakin then decides to go back to Palpatine's chambers, where at this point, Mace Windu is not being a Jedi. He wants to kill the Emperor because he's too dangerous to take in. which might be actually the right decision, but killing someone is not something that what a Jedi should do. In fact, Anakin has already done that earlier in the film by killing Count Dooku. You know, he knows how it's like, what that feels like, and he doesn't want it. He doesn't believe in it. But as it's happening, as, you know, Dooku and, or as Palpatine and Mace are fighting to the very end, you know, Anakin goes in and stops him, and Anakin is able to, it falls to the dark side because Palpatine uses the one bit of information that no one on the council or the Jedi were willing to admit, that he tells Anakin he's able to save Padme. He can do that. He can save Padme. He can go ahead and teach him how to do this, and his love, his fear of death for Padme is what drops him to the dark side. You know, like,
yeah.
And it's, you know, here's the thing is, if they had simply trusted in him, if they had trusted in him and he was able to trust into the Jedi Order and not see the corruption and be able to confide in them of what's going on with Padme and everything, because, you know, again, going to EU, this would not be the first Jedi marriage. We've seen them in the EU. Obviously, that's not canon anymore. But if he was able to confide in anyone else and have a full conversation about it, he may not have fallen. Or if Qui-Gon was around. Being part of the, be mindful of the living force. Qui-Gon saw, you know, from beyond the grave, what happened on Tatooine. You know, it may not have happened. But, of course, he does fall. And he kills Mace Windu.
Well, yeah, I guess, and if there weren't that inherent hypocrisy in the Jedi Council and in characters like Mace Windu, who break their own rules or break their own teachings and want to kill instead of, you know, it was really a confluence of everyone's failures that caused Anakin to go bad.
Yeah, it was the combination of multiple bad decisions, like we said.
So does that make, that just makes a better character in Anakin then, how complex he is, how he wanted to do the right thing, how he eventually, I mean, he becomes a slave to the dark side. He's already been a slave. He's like, I'll try it again. A slave to the dark side for decades.
I don't know if anyone wants to be a slave there, Eric.
No. But I'm saying he gives up, you know, he gives in. Despite his own inner conflict, because he thinks it'll, you know, for the right reasons, but ends up being one of the most terrifying agents of the dark side, and in fact, you know, like the only one besides the Emperor himself, for some time. And it isn't until, and you know, we'll get into this when we talk about Darth Vader, but he has to be coaxed back by sort of the memory of his wife. He has to be coaxed back by the memories of who he himself as Anakin used to be. It's the only thing that pulls him out of this slump when everybody fails him, you know, and he goes dark. So, you know, it's just kind of it's a very low point for Anakin at the end of Revenge of the Sith. And, you know, the worst of it all, the rotten cherry on top of this spoiled cake is that Padme wasn't saved.
Died from the broken heart that Anakin gives her.
Yeah, when she literally Anakin, dies from the broken heart. Oh, yeah. God.
So, I do want to mention a couple things here. So, he does, at this point, after he kills Mace Windu, he is officially dubbed, you know, Lord Vader by Palpatine. Or Darth Sidious,
Lord
if you will.
Lord Vader, rise.
Rise, exactly. And this is when execution of Order 66 happens. Many Jedi are killed. Obi-Wan survives. So does Master Yoda. Anakin heads to the Jedi Temple. And at this point, the younglings call him Master Anakin. And we know what happens. He kills the younglings, which is really sad. I'm going to move on. And he has that final battle between his brother, Obi-Wan Kenobi. And at this point, I feel like during this fight, he's still Anakin, but he's lost all reason. Because everything Anakin is trying to, or Obi-Wan is trying to tell Anakin, he is consumed with rage and fear. You know, and if you go back to episode one, you know, there's much fear in him. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. You see that in that final battle. You know, there was fear in him, and that's what led him to the dark side. There was anger and what was going to happen, him and Obi-Wan fight. He literally hates Obi-Wan throughout that fight, and of course, Obi-Wan has the high ground, And
doesn't he even say when he's like missing a few extra limbs? He's like, "I hate you."
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, and it leads to his suffering, you know, being burned. So literally, that line is the entire, you know, from episode one is the entire duel between Obi-Wan and Anakin. At least the way I see it is, you know, that fight there. And of course, he believes Padme and their unborn children have died at the end. Any comments on the duel, Danya? Eric, I know that was just my ramblings of it.
The one thing that kind of, like, always trips me up with this duel is when Obi-Wan is like, "I have the high ground, you can't, like, you can't defeat me." But then didn't we see, wasn't there, like, a bit in episode one in the duel against Maul where he literally pulls himself up off the ledge and from, like, basically dangling down to get the upper hand.
And jumps,
jumps, yeah. So I was just kind of like, that bit always trips me up in the duel, where I'm like, pretty sure we've seen you not having the high ground and kicking someone's ass. So.
Well, no. So the scene you're talking about in episode one was when Obi-Wan fell down. Him, Qui-Gon, and Maul were still fighting. And actually, he didn't have the high ground at that point. He actually was stuck behind the ray shield. And he didn't make it all the way to the end of the corridor of the ray shields, and Qui-Gon still died. So I would say, you know, even though he made it up, he didn't, you know, he didn't recover from it. And actually, you know, if you're going to go into that, which we've talked about with Obi-Wan, you know, Obi-Wan killing or thinks he kills Darth Maul at this time, you know, the only way he was able to do that was after, you know, after Qui-Gon died. You know, he used probably some anger and hate to attack him, which augmented his ability and everything, and that's touching onto the dark side too. So I definitely think it was definitely a myriad of bad decisions by multiple people involved that led to Anakin's fall. You know, maybe if he had a good therapist or something, Anakin wouldn't have become what he did. Or, you know, if Qui-Gon was still around, because, you know, he called from beyond the grave even to do this. So who knows? But definitely this leads to probably the most recognizable character in the Star Wars universe that it brought out Darth Vader, which we will talk about next week. But anyone, if you guys have any thoughts on Anakin's rise and fall, let us know at our radio podcast. As always, I'm Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Eric.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us at our radio podcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/resistance radio podcast.
Woot!
See you next week, guys.
Bye. And we'll talk about Vader. Did you guys see the toddler singing the Imperial March in her crib that's caught on the baby monitor?
No.
Oh,
what?
My gosh. Hold on.
Oh my god, that's amazing. Oh dear.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's amazing. Wow.